From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the June 15 edition of Commodity Week. This week in Chicago, they traded the weather, Europe, the WASD numbers, the Informa numbers, ethanol margins, and a slip in basis. We'll try to find out what's going to happen next week today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Joel Carlin. He's at Western Milling. That's in Goshen, California. Our panelists today in studio include Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online in all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report each and every business day of the year. Online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. The WASD numbers left the corn balance sheet untouched, but the Informa numbers made a big splash on Friday, suggesting farmers had planted 96.8 million acres of corn in the United States. That's about 900,000 more than USDA's March Planting Intentions report. Is this a good news, bad news kind of thing, meaning it's a big number, but could temper a big number from USDA at the end of the month? Matt Bennett?
Well, in my opinion, if we get anything over, 95.9, 96, I think it's going to be somewhat bearish to the market. But on the other hand, I think there's been a lot of numbers floating around there, so I don't think that it's going to be a real drastic effect. I think, to me, there's going to be several things looked at that day, and I don't want to underscore the quarterly stocks report because I think that's going to be a pretty big event as well.
Pete Manhart?
I think the corn one isn't that big a deal because we planted early, and when we plant early, we usually plant more. So I think it was expected to be a little more.
And Chip Nellinger?
Yeah, I think that Informa number was maybe a touch higher than the market expected. But as Matt said, we had some other private firms, Landworth, also out with some bigger numbers than what the USDA put out there. So I think the key will be by the time we get to that acreage and stocks report, what's the forecast? That's really going to drive things for the next 2.5 weeks is, are we going to get rain in the eastern corn belt or not?
Here's what some of the numbers look like in Chicago as we finished up for the week. July corn on the high, we give you the open outcry and the electronic trade the day and overnight all together as one big number, 608.5. This is the high for the week, the low at 575.5, a settlement price for July corn on the week at $5.79.5, finished 18.5 cents lower. And December futures at $5.06, the harvest month finished down 38 cents for the week. This despite the fact that we have 40, 50, 60, 70 overs in the cash market, Matt Bennett.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see that happen, especially here towards the end of the week. I guess I was a little surprised to see the weakness today. But as far as the overs go, there's no question that sourcing corn isn't quite as easy as maybe some might have thought it was going to be maybe 3-4 months ago. And so basis levels are awfully strong. And, moving forward on this corn, looking at 18.5 lower and 38 lower, I think we could reverse that awfully easily if the forecast you know, isn't quite what we think that it's going to pan out to be. In fact, I could see next week being extremely volatile.
Actually, the 18 and a half lower is what we traded lower on Friday afternoon. I'd have to check that number. Maybe I wrote the wrong one down, but
that was just Friday afternoon. Yeah,
that's Friday afternoon. On that number, though, there were a lot of rumors about ethanol plants, about usage, about all kinds of things, and what'd you make of them that were moving this marketplace around?
Well, the ethanol talk was plants are closing down because, one, they can't source corn at all because there isn't any, or they can't source it to their price, so they're going to close down and sell the corn they have. Well, if I can't get corn, I don't really have much corn to sell, so I think that was kind of a bogus, hoaxy thing out there. And then the weather forecast, there's a few put a little moisture in for the weekend, but most in the eastern Corn Belt, and that's what we're going to look at is the weather,
Jim, hot
and dry.
Jim, you mentioned the weather. It's a big deal for you.
Absolutely. I think that weather forecast is going to drive things for 2 weeks. Those rumors Friday, first I heard that we were going to import corn from Brazil, then ethanol plants are going to shut down. I think really it can probably be best attributed to just some fund liquidation ahead of this weekend and these elections in Greece. There's just a lot of fear around that. But the forecast, very, very dry in the Eastern Belt. We need rain quickly.
No doubt about it. And I think whenever you look at this ethanol situation, you look at the ethanol production numbers that came out this week, 98 million bushels was, you know, 5-6 million bushels over what we need on a weekly basis to reach the goal. And we're going to most certainly reach the goal this year unless something paramount happens. There's no indication to me other than this rumor, I guess, that we're slowing down as an industry. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see next week if we back off of those real strong numbers. And as far as this forecast goes, I'm right with Chip. I mean, this could be a pretty big event if we miss this rain, because there's several people clamoring in the eastern Midwest for rain. And if they don't get it, they don't know that they're going to have a corn crop.
You know, the drought monitor map just shows some really wicked areas. There's one in central Illinois. There's a large part of Indiana, a little bit of Ohio up in the northwestern corner, part of Missouri, down in the southern part of southeastern Iowa that's really suffering at this point.
It's suffering, and the thing that people don't realize is because we planted early this year, we have corn tasseling right now in places, and we have a lot of the Midwest that's going to tassel in the next 10 days when we have this heat and no rain, and that's when we really need a lot of moisture, and we have none.
So is your opinion here that are we still 3 weeks ahead on most of the corn crop or not?
I think it depends on where you're at, obviously. You get up towards Interstate 80 in Illinois and Iowa, there was a lot more replant than people give credit for. So I think it depends on where you're at. But generally, we're ahead of pace.
Yeah. So let me ask the question differently. Are we 3 weeks ahead in the most droughty areas, and is that the bigger problem that we're facing?
I think Pete hit the nail on the head. There's corn that's getting ready to tassel. It's very critical time, not from a temperature also, but from precipitation. So it's really a variable corn crop in various stages as well. So lots of damage can still be done.
There's no doubt there's a lot of different scenarios in different areas. In our particular area, there's a lot of corn planted right there at the end of March that looks really good, actually, still, because we haven't had excessive heat. You know, and we've been fairly cool in the evenings. And, you know, whenever we get 92, 93 over the weekend this weekend, it's really going to put some stress on the crop. And I think you're going to see, you know, paramount stress on this crop. And if we don't get some rain to follow up this heat, we're going to be in deep trouble next week.
Did paces hold up all week for corn or not?
It depends where you're at, actually. I mean, there's certain people that are really hunting for corn.
You know, Decatur was 76. Ottawa, the river yesterday was 58. Today it was 38. Why? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it really varied. Around to Bloomington Normal, you could get 40 to 45 over in places.
Mm-hmm. Also, just a couple weeks out from first notice day on July futures, you got a lot of places rolling to September. Big inversion in that market. So there can be some games that are played here for a couple of weeks, too. But the bottom line is there's just not a lot of old crop corn out there.
Everybody's been watching Greece. You mentioned that one early on. They'll be making a vote this weekend, and it's really not the vote. It's what happens after the vote that matters.
That's right. And the financial markets are just ultra sensitive to that. There's really a lot of concern about what the result could be after those elections. They're announced, to my understanding, late Sunday afternoon. and lots of uncertainty in the financial and currency markets.
I guess you'll be in the office on Sunday evening, probably.
Most likely.
I will be this time. But, you know, we've heard all kinds of things about Greece. It's really bad over there. Now it's Spain. And, you know, if I've got money as a country, do I really want to loan it to them? Well, if I don't, we're how far down the tube we go. But we've had people tell us, you know, if they vote the bad guys in, Greece will just get out and they'll get over quicker. And I've heard if the good guys get in that are actually going to not spend all their money, that'll give everybody a new relief and we'll get more problems fixed. So I've got people telling me it doesn't matter which way it goes. It's gotten to be such a big problem that people are recognizing it and they're going to do something. Actually do something.
All right. Soy complex this week. July beans at $14.49 and a quarter top. Bottom at $13.70 and a half. Settlement price for the July contract down 50 and a quarter cents at $13.76. November beans at $13.14, down 18 and a half cents. The beans were supposed to be the bright spot. I thought last week when we talked on Commodity Week that they were maybe ready to rock and roll. Maybe they still are, but that's a pretty tempered week after that kind of bullish thought last week.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think there's a lot going on in the marketplace. And, you know, looking forward, looking ahead, I guess long term, my opinion on this is that beans could be, I guess, an upside leader. You look at, you know, the USDA is basically saying we need pretty decent size acreage and, you know, we're going to back off demand a little bit and we need a really good crop to get to, what, 150, 200 carry out. I don't know. There's not a whole lot of room for wiggle here.
We need a really good crop to get to not such a big carryout.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And then on the beans, unlike corn, which even in your area, in a lot of areas, still looks pretty good despite the rainfall, beans, those planted later, not so great at this point, but I suppose they can lay around for a while. They're a pretty resilient crop.
I had one farmer tell me today he planted 400 acres of beans and 25 are up and they've been in the ground a month, dry dirt. But beans in general, we had 2.1 million more acres announced by that outfit today.
Informal, right?
How many acres of wheat beans are we going to have less? I think there could easily be a million and a half less of beans after wheat because it's too dry to plant them.
You can plant them, but they ain't going to come up.
and we're at this point right now where they're making a decision about prevent plant on some of those double crop beans, right?
You can plant double crop beans clear up to the first week of July and still be okay usually, but you got to have moisture.
Yeah, moisture is a big concern. I've driven over the last 3 weeks probably close to 1,200 miles, mostly in Illinois and Iowa. There's some ugly looking, poor stands of beans out there. I think what's holding us back a little bit is the fund length is record, 200,000 contracts, and they had some fear going into this weekend as well. So I think midweek into the end of the week, you saw some funds liquidate, get out, take profits. They might reassess come Monday, depending on this European issue and the Spain deal. So it's still lots of upside in the beans. We got a long, long way to go as far as the growing season goes.
Okay. So the other thing that was talked about quite a bit in the last week was the corn-bean ratio and how that might spread. So usually it's, what, 2-3 to 1 or something like that. 3 to 1 is okay. 4 to 1 would be a really big spread. What do you think? What's possible? Well, not what's possible. What do you think is going to be right? And maybe we'll go across the board to whoever wants to answer that
one. It's a pretty complex way of looking at it because, to be perfectly honest, in the next few months I could see us getting out to 3 to 1 or more. But then you got to look and see what's South America going to do. And even though we're going to have a really tight carryout, how many beans are we going to export, you know, if they come online with an enormous crop this next year, which they're forecasting, and then they're able to put beans on the market much cheaper. So I could certainly see 3 to 1 plus for the next 6 to 8, 10 months, and then after that, I don't think that we're going to see that.
My opinion is from a 2012 perspective, it doesn't really matter anymore. It matters for 13 to keep the acreage for 13 in line, but now that the crop's in the ground, it could go to 5 to 1 if it had to, if we had a short bean crop. So I don't see that as big an issue driving the markets going forward for the next few months as it was prior to planting.
Our research guys in Chicago said the acreages are so short and the usage is so good, we could have $15 beans. If we have a good crop, we could have $15 beans this fall and $4.50 corn. He said it's that crazy because of shortage of acreage.
Right. Wheat futures, July contract, 642 and a quarter on the top for the week. The bottom at 607 and a half, a settlement price there at 609 and a half. They were down 20 and three quarters. July for 13 at 688, down 32 and three quarters on the week. And then let's put the livestock in as well, $120 and a nickel on the top side for the live cattle, 115.85 on the bottom. Settlement price down $3.72.5 at 116.15. And the August feeders at 156.25 were down $3.35. Lean hogs finished at $93.25. They were up a dime for the week. Anything in those commodities, wheat or livestock across the board, that you saw that made you think twice about them this week?
I think the wheat, the thing that was quietly missed by a lot of people this week because of the financial market turmoil, China bought some U.S. wheat. And that's the first time in a long time, I think, we're on the downside of harvest here, and we're at good value. Still dry in Russia, still dry in China. I think we're close to a bottom in wheat, and seasonally, this is the time of year where you could probably see something, some type of a bottom forming.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. That's Chip Nellinger. He's with Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Also in studio, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal. And also here from Windsor and TGM is Matt Bennett. We'll be back in just 2 minutes on Illinois Public Media.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The second week of June was generally pleasant here in Illinois, with near normal temperatures. After a very warm weekend last weekend, a cold front swept through Illinois on Monday, bringing cooler and drier air into the state for the remainder of the week. Temperatures dropped below normal for a couple of days before recovering late in the week. Early morning lows on Wednesday were in the mid-40s in parts of central and northern Illinois, 10 to 15 degrees below normal. However, the big news revolves around the rain, or rather lack of rain, in Illinois. The front on Monday did bring some hefty amounts to parts of central, southwestern, and southern Illinois. 1/2 to 1.5 inches of rain was measured, with the higher amounts being fairly isolated. However, this was the proverbial drop in the bucket, and more rain is needed across the state. Over the last 30 days, rainfall in Illinois has been less than 50% of what we normally expect. There should be some scattered showers and thunderstorms in Illinois late this weekend, but after that it looks like warm and dry for much of next week. By late Thursday or Friday, an approaching cold front looks like it will bring a good chance for rain to much of Illinois as it moves through the state, with the heaviest amounts favoring the northern half of Illinois. However, that's days away, and we're likely to see some changes to the forecast before then. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is Commodity Week, a production of the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason, your host, in studio with us today. Pete Manhart, Chip Nellinger, and Matt Bennett on the phone line. Joel Carlin of Western Milling. He's in Goshen, California. His charts appear, actually, in DTN Grains. He's a commodity merchandiser, a market analyst for Western Milling. His specialties include supply-demand analysis, price forecasting, and relative value nutritional analysis. Joel, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us from California. I'm going to ask something that's not in your bio, but we know that there are ethanol plants and distribution systems in California. How have they survived over the past several years?
Marginally. Right now, there's 6 ethanol plants in the state of California, and you have really about 3 that are operating right now. In California, as in elsewhere in the United States, ethanol margins are really scrimped. And I think that the California plants have really been hurt hard by the increase in freight, which has escalated the price of of corn. And also, the dairy sector is sort of in dire straits in the western United States, and so the demand for the distiller's grain has dropped down. So they're really, as I said, not doing well, but doing a little better than before. There was just 2 years ago, all the plants there were shuttered, and now about half of them are operational.
Yeah, Joel, with that being said, we were talking in the first half of the show about you know, last week's number, or this week's numbers that were released from last week for the ethanol production were 98 million bushels. So is that something that surprises you, and what do you see moving forward throughout the rest of this year and really into the first of the next marketing year?
Well, I think that the ethanol production has continued to be surprisingly strong in light of the reduction in the blender credit and the suspension, actually, of the blender credit, and also the lowering of the import tariff. I think that you know, they may have been able to lock in some margins, and I think some of the ethanol people are fairly astute when buying corn, buying some of the dips and coming in here. But I think that the I think what's really hurt some of these people recently has been not only the you know, the flat price, but the record basis levels. They're really and paying extraordinarily amounts. So I think in addition, this time of year you do have some maintenance operations, so they shut down. So, you know, we're picking up plenty of reports that a lot of plants are starting to, you know, to back off and are either have or actively thinking about reducing their grind.
What do you think about the USDA's 166 average yield compared to where we're at this year? The good to excellent's less than last year. Last year we averaged 147.
Right.
Have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I just there's going to be a piece appearing in DTN, and this is the bottom line. I think even before the drought really started spreading in the eastern corn belt, there was a lot of skepticism about this 166 yield because the USDA is setting the bar very high. This is a record yield. It beats the 2009 yield by 1.3 bushels per acre. A lot of people are saying, in light of the past 2 years when yields are down below trend, and I know that yields were down in due in part to some adverse growing weather, a lot of some people are pointing to the fact that the increasingly a lot of U.S. corn being planted in some of the less productive areas that have yield growth below the national trend, below the core Midwest states. The increased amount of continuous corn going in and the yield drag suggests that you're not going to get these yield advances. Corn yields have advanced by about 2 bushels per acre over the past 30 years, and you're not starting to see that. So you had some questions there. And then with the adverse weather, you know, maybe some people were surprised that the USDA didn't lower the yield from May to June. They very rarely do that. But since 1993, they've lowered the yield. They've changed the yield 8 times and lowered it 5 times from the June to the July WASD. And if this corn conditions continue to deteriorate, it's very likely that you could see a yield reduction in the next WASD report.
Joel, I'll switch gears a little bit on you here. You mentioned the DDGs. That's kind of the less the least transparent of all the reporting that we get. With high soy meal prices, do you see DDGs becoming more of an impact profit wise for ethanol plants, or more into the feed rations nationally?
You know, I think that the ethanol plant, obviously they do derive, you know, some decent revenues from the distillers, but I think that, and that'll, you know, probably keep them going, I still think that it's really the ethanol margins. I mean, you know, distillers is a byproduct, and I think it's really the profitability of the ethanol that's going to continue, as I said, to drive these plants. I'll tell you, on the feed use side, distillers is increasingly being incorporated into almost all the rations because of the very high price of protein meals. Distillers, on a per unit of protein basis, is a very good deal. In addition, you're feeding a product with the same energy as corn.
Can I ask you more about this, one of your specialties, this relative value nutritional analysis, and you may be able to help us out. There's always a fight over the weight of corn. And what impact that really has on nutritional value, and whether a pound is a pound or whether a bushel and the weight makes a difference. What's your view?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because I think that, you know, the past couple of, you know, some of the past few years we've had some very good quality corn and we've had some very poor quality corn, and I think that bushel weight and test weight, you know, is very important, at least as I said, at least on the feed side. Perhaps maybe that's one of the reasons why you've had some strange quarterly stocks reports, because the farmer looks in the bin and sees a certain volume, but then when you weigh it out, it doesn't measure up there. I think that the 2009 crop, even though it was a record crop, it was sort of a low test weight crop, so you had to feed more of it to attain feed efficiency gains, and you had to use more of it to obtain the desired amount of ethanol. Conversely, 2010, was a very good year in terms of quality, and so you're able to have much better feeding efficiency rates and ethanol grind rates. So I think that's a good question. I think people at the USDA are looking into that, perhaps as a reason, probing a little bit more as to maybe this helps explain some of the vagaries in these quarterly stocks reports.
Let me follow up real quickly, because volume is one thing, but weight is a different thing. So on the one side, you've got a farmer looks in and has a bin that's not actually as full as he thinks it is. But on the flip side, when you're feeding, it's the inverse, right? So does it really make a difference other than the farmer might be reporting it wrong?
Yeah, as I said, maybe is this a reporting it wrong? I just think that, as I said, the farmer's looking, as I said, at the volume, but as I said, it's also, as far as the feed, it's also, the weight. I mean, as far as nutrition goes, it's the bushel weight, it's, as I said, it's the test weight, the pounds of dry matter that are going into an animal. And so you can feed, a bushel of corn, but is it really, is it really 56 pounds? Or maybe it's, 54 or 53, and that does make a difference.
Yeah, Joel, looking towards these reports that were coming out at the end of the month, and seeing what the USDA has done here, keeping us at 851, what do you look at, or what are you looking for as far as the quarterly stocks report go, and what is it that's going to make the market go up or down the limit this time?
Well, one of the things that I've been thinking about over the past couple of weeks is the reluctance of the USDA to print a bullish corn number. We've already alluded to some way. They're keeping the 166 bushel per acre yield. They're holding ending stocks at 850 million. I see that Dr. Glauber a couple of weeks ago was really sort of poo-pooing the tight corn situation, feeling that ethanol demand will plateau and have business have a decent crop. So it's difficult for me to envision the USDA printing a bullish quarterly corn stocks number because I think domestic demand really has been abysmal. I mean, feed demand is down. Animal profitability almost all sectors is down. Animal numbers are down. I think that ethanol usage is starting to plateau. And so, and I don't think they have a really good handle on the amount of alternative products, whether it's distillers or increased forage that end users are actually feeding. I just sense that the USDA is, they realize that they, given we have basically the second tightest stocks and stocks to use ratio ever, they're really reluctant to throw gasoline on what now is sort of a simmering little fire. But as you gentlemen alluded to earlier, we come in next week and the forecasts for the Eastern Corn Belt remain dry. We very well could be off to the races, and they don't want to do anything to inflame that situation.
Okay, one, make this quick for me if you could. Bullish or bearish corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Neutral on wheat, bearish on corn, and bullish on soybeans. We really could have a very out of control soybean balance sheet next year.
Thank you so much, Joel.
You're welcome.
Joel Carlin is with Western Milling. He's in Goshen, California. Now, final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
I think if we get a good weather market fired up and going here and you feel halfway decent about your production potentials, it might be a good time to set something in place.
Pete Manhart?
Weather's the big thing right now. If without rain in the Eastern Corn Belt, we're going to boom. If we have good rains in the next week, we could say the other side. So be ready to protect or take part in whichever side will help you.
And Chip Nellinger?
I would say make the plans now. Think about alternatives no matter which way the market moves so you're not handcuffed by the volatility that's coming.
Our thanks to Matt Bennett of TGM, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing. That wraps up this June 15 edition of Commodity Week. You can always hear it again if you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a very good weekend.